track at the wall. We are tied.
Look at this. He's landing the score. I don't believe it. I don't believe it.
Rob dropping a big leg. Over for the cover.
It's over. Unbelievable.
High fly ball.
He got it! The starter! Mike Tyson in! Austin is the champion! Stone Cold! Stone Cold! Stone Cold!
Now the 2-2. Well hit down the left field line. Way back and
touch a ball, Drew! You'll never hit a bigger home run in your life!
Legion of Pisses?
What's up, Connection? Welcome to Dirty War Wrestling Above Replacement, where we honor all of the legends and their great theme songs along the way. I'm JT. Joining me, as always, is my good buddy Marcus, and on this show, Marcus, we are taking a journey through every WWE pay-per-view in history, and I'm going to rank them all by the end of this with a very unique set of metrics. Everything in North South Connection is unique. This podcast is simulcast on both audio and video, audio on any podcast application, video right here on our YouTube channel. Be sure to subscribe to both because we have exclusive content on both. This WrestleMania season, Marcus, has been insane. Of course, WrestleMania is this weekend. If you need to get pumped and you haven't checked out some of the stuff we have to offer, please do it. Ryan Gray and I have ranked every single WrestleMania match ever, 402-1. Number one drops on WrestleMania Saturday. Those are all 1 minute or less short form on our TikTok channel and on YouTube Shorts as well as Instagram. So check those out. We've also previewed every match for this year's WrestleMania. We counted down the 40 greatest WrestleMania competitors of all time. We've done tier lists, Marcus. We did a couple. WrestleMania rewatchability, WrestleMania build. Aaron and I did WrestleMania theme, kind of the overall vibe of every WrestleMania. We've reviewed WrestleMania 13 on Wrestling Warzone, WrestleMania 5 on Cardoso. There's so much WrestleMania content for you here. Hit the North South Connection, subscribe. And all the great content isn't going to stop flowing after this weekend. So stay with us. Subscribe. Share with a friend. We've made it a goal to hit 500 by WrestleMania. So help us get there. And enjoy the ride. Appreciate it. All right, bud, on this show here, like I mentioned, we're going through every pay-per-view in history. We're doing a seasonal format. So we start with the pay-per-view following any WrestleMania in a given calendar year, and we end with WrestleMania the following year. So this season right now, we're doing 2005-2006. So we started with Backlash 05. We end with WrestleMania 22, which is coming pretty fast, only a few episodes away right now at this point. And we do this with a series of categories, Marcus. You want to run through what those categories are that we rate everything of each pay-per-view on?
You think I'd have them memorized by now, but I don't. It is build, commentary, atmosphere, notable moments and importance, match grades, card structure, rewatchability, and all-time matches. And for a match to be a plus in the all-time category, it must be ranked by both of us 4.25 and above. For it to count as a negative, it is something we both agree is 0.75 and below.
Yes, and so to award points or take away points in these categories, we look at everything at a replacement level. You know, everything we talk about is average, right? Or you look at, like, what's a standard wrestling match, what's a standard wrestling crowd, wrestling commentary, bill. And anything that we felt was better than that average typical thing gets a plus one. Anything we felt was worse gets a minus one. If it's very good or very bad, it gets a two or minus two. And if it's all-time historical, great, plus three. If it's all-time historical, bad, minus three. That's the max we can give on each side. So then we kind of do all the pluses, all the minuses. We net that out. We grade every match. We take your grade. We take my grade. We average those up. We total it all together. And that gives us a final wrestling above replacement level score. And then we stack every pay-per-view all together. So that all said, bud, we're going to start here tonight. We're going to do two shows. And tonight we're going to start with Taboo Tuesday, November 1st, 2005. Taboo Tuesday, November 1st, 2005, from the iPay One Center in San Diego, California. 6,000
in attendance. 619 Cole.
Oh, here we go. It's off the chain. This is also the final Taboo Tuesday. The year after, in 2006, they moved this to Cyber Sunday. So they did two events on the Tuesday night, 04 and 05. So that's where we're at there. Let's take a look. For on commentary, of course, we had this is a Raw show. So we have Jerry the King Lawler, and we have a debuting play-by-play announcer in Joey Styles. Of course, Jim Ross, in the weeks leading up to this, had to undergo emergency stomach surgery. They found a blockage that they had to get removed, so he was on the shelf. WWE and Vince McMahon pretty notoriously negotiated with Mike Goldberg from UFC and tried to get him to come over. He ended up rebuffing them. I think they offered him like a five-year deal to be the main guy. And it was also during this time that WWE was moved back to USA from Spike. Spike had brought on UFC. So there's a lot of weird movement going around in September of 05. So they kind of panicked going into the show. The plan was to have Coachman and Lawler call it. But that day, they made an emergency deal with Joey Styles to come in and just call the show. And then they would eventually reach a long-term deal with him to be the full-time Raw play-by-play announcer, kind of the voice of the future, because the plan was to roll Jim Ross out of there and no longer be kind of the main voice of Raw. So what were your thoughts at the time with the whole Ross thing and when they brought Styles in on the emergency deal?
I remember thinking about, like, Jim Ross, like, just be patient. Like, he'll be back, you know, like, he'll be back eventually. But that's not how, you know, WWE really thinks. It's, you know, got to fill the hole right now. And then Mike Goldberg, I was like really against, because I was like, that's the UFC guy. Like, I don't want him, you know, calling my wrestling. And I remember those rumors were like really hot. And I remember there's like a Raw where it was like, he might be at the building. He might be calling the show tonight. Like, as I was getting ready to tune into Raw. And I think he's even gone on record by saying like the deal was pretty close to being done. And he, you know, he backed out last second. Yeah. So to think like what, you know, the mid 2000s would have sounded like with Mike Goldberg as the voice of Raw. Would he have went out pretty quickly, like a lot of commentators have done when they get that lead chair on Raw. We've seen that in the COVID and post-COVID times here. But Joey Styles felt like a big get. And I guess with the One Night Stand shows, or the One Night Stand show at this time,
right?
It's, I guess it was less taboo. Taboo Tuesday, it was less taboo to like bring him in because he'd already kind of done the soft launch with One Night Stand, right? But that was another one that was like,
in place.
Yeah, it was an icebreaker, I guess. But you know, I liked Joey Styles coming in. I thought it was better than Mike Goldberg. Nothing against Mike Goldberg, but like Joey Styles is a wrestling dude, so bring him
he's
in.
He's got more credibility, he's got more history. I think Goldberg had more cred as a sports announcer, and it kind of would have been a good blow to UFC, honestly, if they brought him in, because he really was the voice of UFC. They just got to Spike. They just started Ultimate Fighter. So this is like a pretty key time for UFC as well. So I think if they could have stole him away, it would have been a big deal. I think Styles is a fit, but I think you're right. I think Goldberg probably doesn't even last. I think it's He might even last as long as Styles does on the Raw side, because this is always, they always end up going back to JR, right? It's just kind of where they always end up. But I don't know how it would have gone, but yeah, I mean, it was definitely, the 5-year deal was definitely rumored. So no clue if they would have boarded out of that and just paid him off or tried to bury him on whatever they would have tried to do. But I mean, Styles is pretty much off Raw by Backlash, as we'll, you know, we're not going to get to all that in this season, but and they kind of use the ECW rebirth to just parlay him off to that and get him off of Raw and bring Ross back. Even though Vince like tries his best regularly to get rid of JR, he just could never find anyone for years and years, you know, before he ends up eventually just switching him to SmackDown. But so Styles again makes the emergency deal, comes in at the last minute for this show. We have one heat match. It's Curran White and Matt Stryker defeating Shelton Benjamin and Val Venus. What a fucking mix of talent that is. Something there. That brings us to our opening match, which is a tag team match between Rey Mysterio and Matt Hardy defeating Snitsky and Chris Masters. The voting here was to pick which two SmackDown competitors would take on Snitsky and Masters, and Hardy and Rey won. The match itself was fine. I went 3 stars. You know, I think it's pretty basic tag opener. All four guys, you know, worked pretty hard in it. Hardy, though, you can already feel he had already moved to SmackDown because he lost the Loser Leaves Raw match on the first Raw in USA to Edge. So that thing's done. You know, he ends up losing the final battle. So he's already cooked and cucked and off to SmackDown. And then it's also notable because this is Christian's last appearance in WWE for a while. Probably, what, 5 years almost? Almost 6 years.
Yeah, until what, 2009?
Yeah. Yeah, so what's this, so 5, so 4 years. So he, or is it 10? When's he come back?
Yeah, maybe it's, I thought he comes, right, back shortly. It's early 2009.
Yeah, it's early 2009. So yeah, you're right. It's so about 3.5 years, whatever it is. But he's in the backstage vote. That's the last time we see him. He's just standing there as one of the guys you could vote on, and then he was done. So his promising 2005 quickly went to shit when they didn't really pull the trigger when he was at his hottest. So what'd you think of this match?
I went 3, just kind of, you know, it was a good opener. They got the crowd going. Hardy, Mysterio, two good workers, so they know what they're doing. And I thought Chris Masters looked good here too. So yeah, 3 for me. Next up we've got Eugene and the lead vote getter, Jimmy Superfly Snuka, defeating the team of Rob Conway and Tyson Tomko. This is during the soft launch of Rob Conway, the Con Man. He had done a thing where he disrespected the legends in the build-up to this. And we get Duggan and Kamala coming out as well to beat up on Conway post-match. I went 2.5. I thought it was pretty standard. Nothing to write home about.
Look at me. I went 1.5. It was, yeah, whatever. It's standard schlocky stuff that they do with the legends during this time period. And they had Duggan and Kamala there anyway, so they brought them out just to get them on screen. Since they lost a vote, they fly them in. You might as well just send them out there for the pop. I was surprised Snuka won. I guess he was always the most over, but and Duggan had kind of, I guess, popped in and out a couple times. So maybe they
failed. Yeah, I guess.
I guess. I don't know. I thought Kamala was like the one that maybe would have won because I feel he's the least, the guy who had popped up the least over those years. I know he was in the gimmick battle royal, but they, beyond that, I don't think he'd really been on at all. So.
Would have thought Hacksaw for sure.
Yeah. All right, 1.5 for me there. Our next match is Mankind. Yes, Mankind taking on Carlito. We had a vote to pick which Mick Foley character, and Mankind won overwhelmingly, which I remember being really surprised at the time. I went 2.75 on this. It was fine. It was a little bit better than I remembered. It felt like kind of a missed opportunity with Carlito, though, here, where he ends up jobbing clean to Mankind. I also thought if you were going to do Mankind, why not do like really throw it back and go like 96 Mankind and have the old music and like the brown outfit on versus the corporate end of life Mankind that we got in 98, 99. I like that Mankind, but it feels like we've seen that like a million times. Like why not go way back and break out the old piano music and have him do the real scary Mankind. But again, I was surprised Cactus didn't win the vote and just like have like a, you know, mall with Carlito. So it was fine for me, 2.75, but nothing. I don't think Carlito benefited a lot from it. I'll put it that way.
No, definitely not. I went 2.25 just because of how disappointed I was with the match and what it could have been and what it ended up being. You know, maybe Dude Love would have been a better fit taking on Carlito. Battling over who's, you know, who's being cool. Yeah, the Mankind thing, they're like half pregnant. It's like parts of 96 Mankind. It's parts of like End of Life Corporation era Mankind. They're all over the place. And then Mankind just eats him up. Like he does his comeback and then he just eats him up. It's not competitive really down the stretch. It's a really weird match. Definitely interesting to go back and watch. That takes us to our World Tag Team Title match, as the Big Show and Kane are going to team up together as they are, the two bottom vote getters for the World Title match, taking on Cade and Murdoch. And Cade and Murdoch are going to lose the titles to Big Show and Kane. I went 2.75. Again, I'm just super impressed with Cade and Murdoch, especially Murdoch. Just didn't remember him being this good. And these guys really do shine up Kane and Big Show.
Yeah, I went 2.25. I think it would have been a little bit better. I don't know. Maybe just a little bit more time to tell the story or figure it out. I mean, it was pretty obvious Big Show and Kane weren't going to win the vote. So I'm sure they had time to plan it at least a little bit, but I'm still disappointed too. Like, I know they wanted to do a title change just to give something happening on this show, but I feel like we're kneecapping Kane and Murdoch a little bit. They just won the belts. They were establishing themselves. And now we're right back to the super team on top. Big Show and Kane are fine as a team. It's, I guess, better than having them eating up main event slots, but it also feels a bit like, all right, well, give some other guys a chance. They don't need to have the gold here. So, all right, we have one of the weirdest matches of all time next, as Batista takes on Goldust, Vader, and Jonathan Coachman. So the vote was for what type of match this would be, and Street Fight beats Verbal Debate in arm wrestling. This was supposed to be Stone Cold Steve Austin, and it was built that way with Coach. He was wearing the Austin hat. He kept calling him out. I don't think Austin ever appeared on TV, right? They were just building like Austin was going to be the guy. And then I think Austin
did make a TV appearance.
I think he did. It was whatever it was. It wasn't a lot. It was like,
yeah,
it was kind of, you know, maybe. Oh, was it the homecoming? Maybe.
Yes.
Because isn't that when he stuns all the McMahons?
He stuns all the McMahons. Yeah.
So anyway, and maybe that's why Coach started calling him out after that or something. But Austin's like, I'm not doing this shit. So he ends up just backing out. So they stick Batista in here off of SmackDown at the last minute. You know, the Raw segment where Vader and Goldust debut is pretty infamous because Vader falls when he jumps out of the ring. He slips and he falls on his butt. And then he botches a move in this match too on the spine buster. He kind of falls weird. So it's just the whole thing is like completely just cursed from the beginning, honestly. So I went 2 stars. It's more of an anomaly and a weird footnote than anything special. And obviously Coach just gets his shit pushed in by Batista. So
fever dream of a match. It's weird. Super weird. Somehow they pulled it together for 2.5 for me. Way overachieved. Calling the ace Batista in substitution of Austin. You got Goldust, who's seen better days and will see better days, thankfully. And Vader, what a weird mix of legends here. Next up, we got the Laundry Battle Royal. It is for the women's title. You know, it's all your divas. Trish Stratus is gonna retain the title, picking up the win. I went 2.75. I thought for being what it was, I thought they way overperformed, you know, with the work rate. We're seeing like some spots start getting incorporated into some of these matches as opposed to just like your typical catfight era brawling. I don't know if Finley's there, but you can see some of the work being put in. You're on mute, pal.
Oh, we're live, pal. I went 1.5. It feels like they just didn't give him much time or setup. It was really about how they looked. Trish had recently returned, so she's back to being a face. There's just two over coming back. So it's like they completely just forget all the heel stuff with her that they had built for about a year before she got hurt. So she's out there as a face. She looks amazing, too. She's got the little short bikini thing on, so she looks great. And she wins here to retain. So fine. Up next is our match of the night. It's our Intercontinental title match. It's inside a steel cage. That was the stipulation to vote on, that beat out submission match and regular match. And that is Ric Flair defeats Triple H to retain the Intercontinental title in a steel cage, 23 minutes. This match is a bloody war. It's awesome. I went 4.25, completely holds up. Triple H had returned at the homecoming, beat the shit out of Flair, dragged him around bloody, and kind of was like, time to put you down, old man. And it was a great return for him after the Batista feud and his time away, and gives Flair like a real kind of meaty blood feud to get into that would propel him to his Randy the Ram run in early 06 that we're going to get to. This is kind of the start of it, him becoming like a kind of a gory blood fiend in the ring. So, but this was great. This completely held up. It's awesome.
Yeah, 4.25 for me too. So that qualifies as an all-time match for us. Copy an A, get an A. This is a pretty standard formula for a steel cage match. It's classic. And they deliver. You know, there's a lot of pros and cons to Triple H, but he brought his working shoes this night, and he danced with Flair pretty well. So all-time match for both of us, which leads us to our main event of the evening. It is a triple threat match with the third participant being voted on by the fans. We have Cena defending the title and Angle, the incumbent challenger, and Shawn Michaels being the lead vote getter, earning his way into this triple threat match. I totally forgot this match happened. So I ended up giving it a 3.5. I had no memory of this. Maybe it's because of the Taboo Tuesday, you know, theme and stipulation to the event, but I was like, this is sneaky, like a superstar started triple threat match.
it's loaded up. It's loaded up, and it kind of crosses feud, like Cena and Angle are feuding, but Angle and Shawn feuded all year. They had their series with the finale happened also on Raw Homecoming. They had the 30-minute draw in the Iron Man. So you get one more dose of them. Second straight year, Michaels wins the vote to get a title shot. He had done the same at 04. And this is a very good match. I went 3.75. So I liked it quite a bit. I think adding Shawn in there helps with the Cena angle chemistry that we weren't too hot on when we talked about their match at Unforgiven. We'll get to their other match later tonight. I think Michaels helped really add to that overall presentation. So, all right. So if you take our averages, if you average, you know, your grade, my grade, take the average of that, and then we go plus minus with 2.5, which to us is a standard wrestling match grade. Everything nets out to 2.5 in ring, which is on the lower end of solid for us, pretty much. So not too great. Let's get to our categories, Marcus. So for build, we gave a point for Rob Conway being horny for beating up the Legends. That sets up the match here. A point for the Foley-Carlito-Cabana showdown. Foley's promos is all three faces of Foley. And then a point for Hunter returning and destroying Flair at homecoming. He wants Flair to stop tarnishing his legacy as an old man. So
time to put you down, old man. For the minus, we got a random interpromotional match with no build. I'm talking about the opener. Hardy losing the Loser Leaves Town match, heading to SmackDown. We get Vader and Goldust returning randomly. We get Vader falling down, like you mentioned. Tomko and Conway, random teaming. And nothing about that pairing really makes sense. Character wise, they don't match up. So, for our swore there, that nets out to a -1 for build.
Yeah, kind of tough for build there overall. Let's check out commentary. We give a point for Joey Styles taking over duties at the last minute, a point, and also a point for Joey being prepped on all the stories. The wrestlers really stood out to me. He wasn't kind of throwing it together. It's obviously seemed like a guy that either A, still followed the product and had a base knowledge of everything. B, was an amazing improviser that could just make it up on the go. Or C, just had a lot of prep that day or whatever, and whether it was Cole or whoever prepped him up hard, and he was ready to go. So kudos to him for stepping in and standing out. A point for Joey recalling the last time Angle, Michaels, and Cena all won world titles and made a last-minute main event kind of feel like a big battle of the stars. And then a point for Joey, too, in the cage match. Really hit his groove. He elevated Lawler with him and calling a bloody war. It's kind of his specialty, obviously, from ECW. And he really stepped up to the moment and made that feel like a big match.
Yeah, welcome addition to commentary. For the Miners, we got the JR medical issues taking him out of the picture. Joey's terrible fake laughing about Coach getting beat up by Batista. But that gives us a war of two for commentary.
Yeah, so again, not bad. Usually the Raw commentary is in the shitter. So Joey definitely helped out there. Atmosphere, we have a point for Twisted Transistor by Korn, theme song. Really sets the stage for the night ahead. A point for the big hot hometown pop for Rey Mysterio. A point for Rob Conway's theme. Obviously, is an epic all-timer. It's got the Randy Newman deal there. A point for the big pop for the Superfly Splash by Snuka. A point for the pop for Duggan and Kamala, who are really over. Of course, a point for I Walk Alone, Batista's massive entrance. A point for a big pop for Michaels. And then a point for the crowd being just wildly into Angle down the finishing stretch of that main event. They really wanted him to win.
Yeah, for our minuses, we get the crowd not being happy about Snitsky replacing Edge and the crowd being split on Cena so early into his reign as the king of Monday Night Raw.
All right, so that's a total of plus five for atmosphere. So a pretty good night in San Diego atmosphere-wise, helps things out. Notable moments, we give a point for the first pay-per-view for Raw after it returned to USA. A point for Jimmy Snuka's first pay-per-view appearance in Survivor Series 1996. A point for Vince McMahon pushing Eric Bischoff back to his old ways, says he won't be helping him. Kind of kicks off this march to Bischoff going off the deep end into his final stretch as GM. A point for Kane and Big Show winning the tag team titles. A point for Vader's first pay-per-view match since 1998. A point for Mickie James sacrificing herself in the lingerie battle royal to give Trish the win. And a point for Triple H's four pay-per-view losing streak, which has to be a record for him.
For our minuses, we got Christian's final appearance, being him standing backstage and losing a fan vote. Carlito on a really bad slide, losing to Flair and Mankind in back-to-back pay-per-views. You can see his push really evaporating. We got Cade Murdoch, speaking of pushes, getting jobbed out and losing the tag team titles to a makeshift team. And it's just really like you see the young talent getting kneecapped all night. It feels like all the progress they started making in SummerSlam and post-SummerSlam with bringing up new talent and what we saw at No Mercy. We covered that. Yeah, with what we saw at No Mercy, They're just totally going backwards.
Yeah. All right, so that's a plus four for moments. I mean, stuff does happen on this show, which isn't a given during this era, honestly. So it's at least notable. 2.5 for matches, like we talked about. For card structure, a point for adding Michaels to the main event. You get both the Angle rivalry slice as well as, you know, covering for Cena after Unforgiven. A point for stacking the two big matches back to back bails out this disaster of an undercard. And then a point for the classic simple old school buddy cage match. Perfect choice for Ric Flair versus Triple H.
For the minuses, we get the absurd and obvious poll options, kind of forcing the booking. Weird use of Edge during his super push, just backing out of the tag match. Odd teaming.
Yeah, we didn't talk about that, right? He was supposed to team with Masters, right? And he ends up putting Snitsky in his place. We didn't mention that earlier, but
yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if he was hurt or they just wanted to build his heat, whatever, but he ends up backing out and Snitsky takes his place. So he didn't want to fight Hardy is how they played it off, but
yeah. And again, like we've seen a lot of Hardy and Edge on TV during this time and maybe they felt it was one time too many, but it's also kind of never stopped him before. The minuses keep going here. We get Austin bailing out on the show, taking his ball and going home again as Coach references, leaving Batista shoehorned in here with Coach. The Conway, that tag match getting way too much time. It goes way too long. Mankind winning the vote. I felt pretty lame, and then it's the late 90s version. Should have gone classic, like you mentioned. And they even use like the old Mankind theme song, which we talked about, again. So it's just, they're not consistent with which version of Mankind they're going with.
At least use the old piano. Like the, when he wins, play the other piano song. Like that would have been cool. You know, I don't know. It's just weird. So minus two for card structure, not a surprise that Taboo Tuesday is a disaster of a card bill. Rewatchability, we give a point for the Mankind elbow to the floor, which is always nasty. A point for Trish, Hachimachi, and then a point for the finishing sequence, which was great in the main event.
And our only minus for rewatchability is Vince emasculating Bischoff yet again on pay-per-view.
Yep, yep. All right, so 2 points there. All-time match, Ric Flair, Triple H qualifies for us, so that's 1 point there. Brings us to a total war score of 13.5, Marcus. Honestly, the way things are shaping up, that's a little bit higher than I would have expected. I would have probably thought it'd be a little bit lower. So that ties it with Unforgiven 05 and Roadblock 2016. I don't remember off the top of my head if we had Unforgiven ahead of Roadblock. So does it have a better match than Unforgiven? Let's see. It does. The best match in Unforgiven was Matt Hardy and Edge. We had that at fours, and this is at 4.25. So this is now our 78th show.
High praise.
78th show out of 120. Right. So, you know.
Could be worse. Clears the basement.
Yeah, back quarter. I would say it outperformed. And when you look at some of the messiness that comes with it, the card get all fucked up, not a lot of good in-ring stuff. You know, when you kind of shake it out, atmosphere and moments really kind of carried the day for the show. So stuff happens. Crowd is into it, had a good vibe to the show. Everything else was kind of a mess. That Taboo Tuesdays, we went through this with 04 as well. Having the Raw the night before is kind of weird. And then the move to USA, all the shit with Austin, and just Jim Ross and Styles. Like, it was just an odd time to have the show for them with all the change surrounding the company. And I think you could see it kind of bled into the march to the pay-per-view.
Yeah, they never quite figured out the Tuesday formula with Raw on Monday. I don't even know off the top of my head. Excuse me. Oh, like what else I could have done different. But regardless, they never got it figured out. So it's not a surprise to see this pay-per-view and this concept moving to Sundays and then eventually washing out. So did you vote on any of these Taboo Tuesdays or Cyber Sundays?
Yeah, I think because they used to just do it on WWE.com, so I definitely remember going in. It was pretty easy.
Okay.
I just went in and filled out the little ballot. I don't think they had the mobile enabled. Maybe they did, but they definitely had the web and just went to the website and voted. So, it was a fine concept. I actually didn't mind it. It was kind of cool having the Tuesday night pay-per-view, something different. I just wish they found a better way to get there. It kind of felt like a homeless man's WrestleMania 13. You know, Chad and I covered that on Warzone. And how like all this change was happening at the worst time for a pay-per-view, because it was like threw the whole thing up into shambles and things felt weird and different. This kind of felt similar to that, right? It's like everything kind of was shifting around and changing. And we'll talk about it more as we go through this fall, but the move to USA kind of reignited Vince, like going all in on like the mean attitude era stuff. And we'll see it through the rest of the season. He like doubled down because the ratings had sunk. He wanted to impress on USA at the big new deal. So they were going there and things just get like kind of crazy again. He starts doing the stupid Dr. Heine stuff with JR. That's a pretty infamous skit. He really ramps up the sexual stuff again. We had the bloody fight here. So they kind of ramp up the violence. And you always hear about the Attitude Era being like unsuitable for kids and like kind of raunchy and this and that. And it was, but I would argue that this stretch right now from late 2005 until mid 2007 is actually like the most egregious, gross, like juiced up violent period that they've ever had. It's like, there's a lot of violent matches, a lot of sexualized content. It's a lot of, everyone's really roided up, like noticeably roided up, like bloated and not looking good. It's just a really weird time in the company. You got Vince doing all the God stuff later. Like it's interesting the way they go, but the next 2 years is like really, really until the Benoit stuff to me is really like one of the worst, probably the worst to me time of the company. I don't know if you agree, but I think this is worse than the Attitude Era as far as like overall gratuitousness.
Yeah. I don't know if it's because the Attitude Era, it was like the first time going down that path. I don't know if it, because the Attitude Era happened to align with like a cultural shift. But like this is Attitude Era with none of the charm. I think that's like the only way I can kind of explain it. Like not that the Attitude Era had a lot of tack either, but like any of the charm, the tack, any of the like intangibles that kind of made like the Attitude Era.
Well, yeah,
like,
they had the stars.
Bottle. It's just missing here. Yeah.
And not just the stars, but also the time of like pop culture. It fit, right? You always hear it, but it fit, right? It was like the MTV Spring Break era, the Jerry Springer era. It was just like a lot of that pushback and rage, and even in the music, it was like very like Limp Bizkit. It was like very angsty in the world of pop culture and celebrities and even sports, like Rock and Jock. And like, I don't know, it just everything fit in that era, Celebrity Deathmatch. Like everything just kind of went with that. Whereas this era felt, it was like, this started to feel more like real sport. Like the steroid stuff was crashing in baseball. Ultimate Fighting was really kind of growing as a more than a novelty. It started to become super popular, and it felt like people just wanted more like legitimate stuff. And now here we're going back. Vince feels like, all right, ratings shit the bed. Well, the last time we were super popular, we were doing all the angry, raunchy bullshit, and they go back, but they have like no governor on it. It's just like we're going full steam, but we're missing that engagement with the crowd and the stardom that carried. Now they still have star power here, but it's not like it was at that time.
Yeah, and it's not like the crowd was craving it either. And to your point about like the stars, like, you know, Austin, Rock, Mankind, like those are all kind of stars that like, again, happened to like, had to exist during the Attitude Era, and they did, and it worked. Whereas like here, I think like the only stars that feel like of the time in a good way are like Batista and maybe Edge. Like those are the two guys I look at and I'm like, yep, that's 2005. That's 2006. If I had to show somebody like
what was 2005 and 2006. Everyone else feels like they're just kind of on their last, like Shawn, Triple H. Like they're still stars, but yeah, they're more of the veteran guys, not like the future of the business. Like we have with Austin, Rock, Foley,
right,
Kane, you know, like whatever it was at the time. I guess, I mean, I think Cena, you know, Cena's in there too. I think Cena, Batista, Edge, really. But anyway, it's definitely a weird time. Like we're going to see it. It's kind of interesting to me because it kind of Eddie and Benoit's deaths kind of bookend it in a weird way. You know what I mean? Like it kind of starts right after Eddie passes away, maybe a little before in early October, but it's right around when he passes away. And then Benoit that ends it. They dial it back big time after that. So it's so odd to me how like, it's just that 18 month time between their two deaths is like this weird little note in history.
Yeah. An unhinged run, unchecked.
Yeah.
And just inauthentic.
They also have no competition to call them out on. And like, mm-hmm. I don't know, like there's no TNA is getting hotter in this time, but they're not strong enough to like really give a push. And TNA, ironically, of course, will go to Spike as well with UFC when Doherty left. So and there you go. All right, so that'll do it for Taboo Tuesday. Let's head over to Survivor Series 2005. And I'll say, Marcus, going in, this is one I had remembered liking quite a bit and like thinking it was a really good show. So I'm curious to see how it holds up with our statistics and our metrics, because going into it, I was expecting this to be one of the maybe top of the year, just based on like, you know, vague memory of it. So
I went pretty even. So yeah, we'll see. And are you ready for the Survivor Series?
Jimmy Jam Garvin. All right, November 27, 2005, for the Joe Louis Arena in Detroit, 15,000. We got Joey Styles, Jerry Lawler, and Jonathan Coachman from Raw, Michael Cole and Taz from SmackDown, alternating based on match. Our one heat match sees Juventud of the Mexicools defeat Simon Dean. And then that brings us to our show, which kicks off with the first match of a best-of-seven series between Booker T. and Chris Benoit for the vacant United States Championship. They had went to battle on TV. The title got held up, so they decided to throw back to their old WCW feud over the TV title and have a best of seven to see if they could recapture some of the magic. I like this match. I'm not going to go as far as to say they refound that magic from Thunder and Nitro in 1998, but this was still a very good kickoff to the series. I went 3.5. And to me, this is a really good opportunity for Booker to kind of rekindle his in-ring a little bit, because I feel like that's definitely faded for him since coming to WWE over the years. The last year or so has kind of dipped. So this is a chance for him to maybe get back on track with Benoit, get a little juice back. He's been a little bit lost since the bestiality stuff. So let's see if this can jumpstart him and get him on a run. So 3.5 for me for this opener, and Booker gets the win in the best of seven, the first match.
Yeah, always excellent chemistry with these guys. 3.5 for me. Right call to start the show off hot. Great match, and it's got me pumped up to see the other matches that we'll get to cover of the best of seven series. Mm-hmm. Next up is an interpromotional match, as it is Trish Stratus defending the WWE Women's title, taking on Melina from SmackDown. They did the bit where Eminem had kidnapped Trish Stratus in disguise, and Melina, you know, was pretty much torturing her to get her to accept the title match for Survivor Series. I went 2.75, and this is kind of our first real look at Melina in the ring as well, outside of the Christy Hemme and LOD stuff that we'd seen earlier at No Mercy. And I was pretty impressed. Great athleticism. I can tell she can work a bit. And I don't know if it's just Trish coming back from the injury, or, you know, she's just getting older, wiser, more experienced. But you can really see, you know, Trish really being able to work here too.
I agree. I went 2.75. Yeah, you can see her feeling a little bit more like an elder stateswoman now, kind of navigating the ship versus just kind of being along for the ride. She's definitely driving things. I thought Melina was impressive here too. We're kind of at the peak Melina powers, as far as like still kind of unknown. Standing at attention, my friend. You know, she's an unknown, but she has a real star aura about her. She's intriguing. Sure. She's different. And now you're like, oh, okay, she can go too. She's not just kind of the hot eye candy with Eminem. So she's definitely feels like she's the modern day Sunny to their smoking guns right now, where she's kind of outshining both of them a little bit, even though they're great in the ring.
That's a great comp.
Yeah. I was going to say the Body Donnas, but I'd say a little bit better than that, more with the guns. All right, so 2.75 for me as well. I thought it was a really good women's match. One of our better ones, honestly. Up next is the rematch from Taboo Tuesday. This is another bloodbath, Triple H versus Ric Flair. No title on the line this time. It's a last man standing match. Triple H gets the win. This goes 27 minutes. I went 4.5 stars. This is fantastic to me. They upped the game from Taboo Tuesday. There's some nasty stuff in here, the screwdriver and the other tools and different stuff. It's, again, it's a gory, bloody match that kicks off this gore run of Flair's. So Triple H pretty much ends the feud with the win here. He'll go on to other stuff, and so will Flair. So,
Another all-timer for us. I matched it with Taboo Tuesday. I went 4.25. I think if you ask me, I'd prefer the cage match. I think I just prefer, you know, that structure and environment. But this was really good stuff too. Really well worked last man standing match. Again, they brought the violence and the gore, the hatred, all that good stuff. It definitely lived up to the stipulation, and probably one of the better last man standing matches they've had in company history. Yep. Next up,
it's a forgotten one, honestly. I think you remember their little feud, but you don't necessarily remember the stip. You know, like, I always remember the cage. I can never remember if this is like last man standing or hardcore, false count anywhere. Like, you don't. So to me, you never hear it on the list of like the greatest last man standing matches. I think you just, for some reason, I never connect the stip to the match, but it's definitely up there for them for sure. Company history.
Yeah. Next up, we have for the WWE title is John Cena defending once again against Kurt Angle. I went 3.5. I don't know. I just don't know. It's not bad by any stretch. It's 3.5. It's really good stuff, but it feels like they're capable of so much more. And it may be part of it is because they're just holding back on Angle being able, you know, go out there and fully be in Kurt Angle, trying to save John Cena.
I went 3.5. It's pretty much identical to Unforgiven. I mean, you got the Daivari stuff in here now too. Like, it's stupid. They just do whatever they can to make Angle a heel and get him over. All right. He's talking about, you know, shitting on the fans. I think it's later, but I can say anything. I don't remember if that was the build up to this or after this, when he's like, I can say anything I want. I could even say I'll make Jesus tap out, right? He starts like kind of pushing the envelope, and then you get Daivari in there as his manager to add the extra heat. They keep it tight. It's under 14 minutes. So, you know, I guess kudos there. We get some tomfoolery with the officials as well, just to kind of carry on that Bischoff is trying to screw with Cena. I think they just took the right. This is one time we're really not listening to the fans burn them, because I feel like to try to rehash Austin McMahon with Bischoff, Cena, it's not working. Mm-hmm. Everyone is dying for Angle. To me, the play here is obvious as day. Instead of trying to rerun Austin McMahon, you rerun Rock and Vince from late 98, where they think Cena is going to be the big face, and then you do the double turn here, and Vince comes out, or Bischoff, where if Bischoff's going to say instead, and you do a swerve, and they screw Angle, and now Cena becomes the corporate champion, and he's a heel. You have Angle now is like super hot as a face because he was already getting over. And then you can turn Cena quickly after, like they end up turning Rock because he's going to get so over as a heel that he's going to end up turning anyway. So like they were so spiteful to try and push Cena as this mega face when they wanted anyone but him. We saw with Jericho. We saw with Christian. We see with Angle. We're going to see it with Edge. We're going to see with Triple H in the rest of the season. It was writing on the wall and just give a short-term boost with him as the corporate champion. And then you could turn that as well. And maybe he's Vince's avatar against Shawn as well, right? Maybe you get a Shawn Cena match in there. So I think that was the whiff. I think they had the template in front of them. They just picked the wrong feud to mimic.
Yeah, and wrong finish at Survivor Series to mimic too, because they love calling back to the Screwjob at Survivor Series and they're teasing it here. But yeah, if they would have went with the corporate finish of the Deadly Game, that would have been fantastic. Again, like you said, Cena would have been instantly over, and it would have worked to their advantage. He would have instantly been over 10 times more as a babyface. You just turn him a month later, 6 weeks later, whatever.
Not even. After Mania. Just get him to Mania as a heel. Maybe he loses the belt there, and then you start to have cracks. Maybe Vince brings in another guy. Just mimic Rock and Triple H, right? Rock got kind of pushed out because Triple H came in, and like just do something like that. Have Vince bring in whoever else, and he pisses off Cena and Cena turns. And now you've got it out of the system, right? You've gotten the heel turn out of the way and you have Angle as a red hot face as well. So anyway, here nor there. Speaking of Bischoff, we have a disaster up next. He faces Teddy Long at Battle of the GMs. I went a full zero dud. I thought this was abysmal. It's 5 minutes. It's so boring. Teddy Long is Palmer Cannon, who's like the UPN representative or whatever with him. And it's just, it's messy. Boogeyman comes out. It's just another chance to humiliate Bischoff at his final pay-per-view. He'd be gone from the company a few weeks later. Another infamous Raw segment where Vince puts him on trial. Vince is the judge, and then they throw him in a garbage truck at the end. That's the end of his run. So this is his last pay-per-view, and they humiliate him on the way out with Teddy beating him. And I thought this was terrible. And you have so many other things you could have added to the show instead of this stupid nonsense.
Get to the value. Get both guys in the ring and have the lights go out and have the boogeyman come out. Just get straight to it. That's all we need to get to.
Don't you make it a match? Just make it a segment, a showdown. Like Bischoff comes out, he's power hungry. Teddy comes out to, you're ruining the show, player. Like, let's settle down. And the boogie comes out and chases him off.
Yeah. 0.75 for me. Takes us to our main event of the evening. It is the traditional Survivor Series match. It is 5-on-5. It is Raw versus SmackDown. It is Rey Mysterio, John Bradshaw, Layfield, Batista, Bob Lashley, and Randy Orton taking on Shawn Michaels, Kalito, Chris Masters, and our Raw the World Tag Team Champions of the Big Show and Kane. Randy Orton is the sole survivor, last eliminating Shawn Michaels. And I went with a 4 for this match. Really enjoyed it. It felt like a modern Survivor Series style elimination match on like a speed run. Again, getting to the value. Once you get the eliminations going, they get to it. They get down to the final 3 or 4 maybe, with Michaels kind of doing his comeback shtick. And you get Orton dropping him with the RKO. So good stuff. And third straight Survivor Series finale for Randy Keith Orton.
Yeah, I went 3 3/4. Same. I liked it a lot. It's definitely a heavy star power match. All the big guys that are in the company at this point. It's a little shorter than Triple H and Flair. I think he, I think they probably could have given him a little bit more time to really let this cook. Maybe get closer to 30. Get rid of the Bischoff nonsense. But again, it's still really good. And then you get the big moment at the end. The Undertaker comes out for his return since No Mercy, cleans house, to stalk Orton. You get the infamous moment where Matt Hardy avoids him and ends up paying for that in the weeks to come. But it's, yeah, it's very, very good. But I think like most stuff on this show came short of its ceiling other than Triple H Flair. And that's what drags the show down, is everything felt like it didn't hit that. We get those shows, there's like SummerSlam and some of those shows where it's like, man, everything hit. They were on fire, Vengeance. This one felt like, yeah, they all came up just a little bit short besides the Last Man Standing.
Yep. All right, let's get to our categories, our plus and minuses. First of all, what's the war score for the average of the match?
All right, so for our matches, the war score is 3.75, so a little bit better than Taboo Tuesday in the Ring, which I would say is a kind of an upset.
Yeah, I guess it does help we get the two. We get the Survivor Series match. We get the Flair and Triple H running it back. Trying to think.
Again, in my mind, I thought this was a better in-ring than it ended up being. But... All right, let's get to our category. So, Bill, we give a point for rebooting the Best of Seven with Teddy holding up the U.S. title. So that was good. A point for Eminem kidnapping Trish, Melina kicking her in the head while she's tied up. That was good. A point for Hunter and Flair's blood feud going strong since the last show. A point for Angle chasing Cena, being a machine in the ring, just being super hyper-focused. A point for Raw versus SmackDown Survivor Series match. She had builds. It wasn't forced for the concept. It kind of started at Homecoming with SmackDown invading. So it felt a little bit more natural than usual. It's not just like, oh, Survivor Series, time to fight. It was more like, oh, hey, they actually showed up, invaded a Raw during the Homecoming show, and then built from there and actually had some rationale behind it. So,
yeah. For our minuses, we got Angle adding Daivari, making no sense. Again, it's a pointless ad, just trying to get Angle over as a heel when he's already over. And then a second rate being used to describe SmackDown a lot after having to move to Friday nights and being taped. It's unoriginal material. They're kind of pointing out their own faults. And even SmackDown as a taped product was still really good. So, calling it second rate in the B show, it's just like,
SmackDown wins the GM match and the main event. So it's like they end up winning too. Anyway.
Your point, I wonder if that's a... another thing to kind of service Raw moving to USA, trying to pump up USA Network for how happy they are to be back in bed together.
Yeah, I think so. It wouldn't surprise me. But then Orton ends up being the sole survivor, like you said, 30 year in a row. So commentary, Taz and Cole were great during the Benoit Booker story, explaining them kind of being friends, having this rivalry, best of seven, etc. Taz asked Joey Styles, what's the deal with that tomato that hangs with Trish? That was good. Joey matches the vibe and story of Cena Angle. Does a nice job weaving in the story, the action, the energy. The main event is a little bit rough because you get all the guys in there. But Taz is fantastic. Red hot. He calls the masterpiece the masturbator. He tells Coach to go back to wrestling school so he can learn the fifth move that he can call. He just roasts Coach the whole match. He shits on Joey. He said, well, aren't you going to talk? Saying he's barely been in WWE. He calls King old, says he's not funny. This is like just pure pissed off Taz. Wants nothing to do with anybody on this night besides Cole. So I went three, Mac. We went three maxed out for Taz in the booth. Beyond that, the main event commentary is a disaster. Like everyone else is all over the place, but he is just, and he's always bullying them to the point where it's detrimental, but he's luckily so fucking funny that it like offsets it. But anyone else really could have like really, torpedoed it because it was way over the top.
Yeah, he is great. He's fantastic. For our minuses, we get the brand wars, pride, especially during the main event, which derails everything with all the fighting. Went -3 there. Coach way too over the top, hyping up Triple H all match. Coach and King bickering all night, really feels forced. They're just trying to get over Coach as a new heel, and King suddenly being all babyface. Yeah. Coach asking if Dimitri Young of the Detroit Tiger speaks English or Ebonics. Cole and Coach brutal during Teddy Long and Eric Bischoff. And then Cole mocking Coach, and Coach trying to help Bischoff is really grating on the ears. So, all right, so I guess we didn't mention there. But we had during the show the Edge and Dimitri Young promo battle. Dimitri Young of the Detroit Tigers, who go on to go to the World Series, right? So they do a little promo battle during the show. But for commentary, that brings it out to a minus one.
Yes, it does. So again, Taz is so good, and we've liked Styles, but this felt like a little bit of a step back for him from Taboo Tuesday. I didn't think he was as strong on the show as he was there, but still solid. And yes, the Dimitri Young segment ends up being one of the highlights, I thought, honestly. But there's some interesting things that we'll get to in a moment. Atmosphere. Big pop for Chris Benoit. Big pop for Eminem and their awesome entrance. The crowd is hot for Trish. The crowd locked in fully to Ric Flair and Triple H in that fight. A point for the crowd being rocking for Cena Angle, a wild viable match. A point for Batista's pop. A point for all the loud Eddie Guerrero chants during Rey's entrance. A point for the Masterpiece entrance, which always hits. A point for the crowd being all in on the main event. And then a point for the pop when Orton gets the win. So that's the one thing for me that really connected on this night was the Detroit crowd. I thought they were fantastic the entire show.
Yeah, they were red hot all night. Checking out the minuses. Crowd being split on Cena overall. Top face goals really slipping off the rails. The crowd being angry and bored during the GM wars after being red hot for the WWE title match. It was quite the letdown. I don't know if they needed that there. I think you just get straight to Boogeyman.
Well, that's the match. If you want to have that match, put it early in the night, right? Because that's what, like, back at Evasion, remember, like, Nick Patrick and Earl fought or whatever?
Right, goes on second.
Do it early. Second, get it out of the way. Like, doing it that late in the night is, like, way too convoluted. All right, so that's an 8 for Atmosphere, Marcus. That's a big showing for the Detroit crowd, and it looks like it's probably going to carry the show here. Notable moments. We give a point for Booker winning match 1 of the best of 7, a point for Undertaker's return, cleans house at the end, and then a point for Orton's third straight year being the survivor really stood out, and they make a point to say, you know, he's kind of dominant at Survivor Series.
Yeah. Love that whole thread with Orton being the sole survivor. Going towards our minuses, we got Edge making steroid and drug jokes just weeks after Eddie died, kind of the unmitigated goal of WWE to try Edge out there and have him say that.
Really Bischoff's stupid. Yeah, he's out there making all kinds of steroid jokes during the baseball segment. Like, what are we doing? Like, Eddie just died of, like, an enlarged heart. it's like he's out there joking about it. It just felt completely unnecessary. I know it was, like, a hot topic of baseball at the time, but we didn't need it. Just call the Tigers losers. Like, at that point, like you said, they end up making the World Series the next year, but at that point, they had it in forever. So just use that to shit on them, you know?
Yeah. We've also got Bischoff's last pay-per-view as a GM. Takes away Raw leadership stability and a great heel character. We got Matt Hardy dodging Undertaker and getting buried on TV afterwards. And Big Show pins Batista halfway through the match. It's a really weird choice. Even with the injury, I think this is where we get a lat tear or something?
He's kind of all taped up and everything. Yeah, he's clearly banged up. Having Big Show beat him clean like that halfway through the match was weird. It was a weird choice. Just have him, like, brawl to the back or something. I guess you get Big Show the moment, but why not give it to someone else in Big Show? It was a weird decision to have him go over Batista. We'll see where the injury stuff goes with him. Sadly, the Matt Hardy thing is classic, because if you rewatch, you know what you're looking for. It's pretty obvious that he bails out and he doesn't take a shot from Taker. And it's like, he's already been cucked enough, lost the Edge feud, and now this is really going to put him in a bad spot over the next couple of months. They definitely punish him hard in the weeks to come after this. So with the infamous Viscera missionary assaults that he gets in there with JBL and gets wrecked. So there's definitely some punishment coming for him not taking the shot from Taker. Minus one of moments, 3.75 for matches. Card structure, we gave a point for starting hot with the Benoit Booker match, a point for giving Melita Trish a lot of time and focus. You don't always get that with the women's matches. A point for the cool touch having the locker rooms cheer on the main event teams, so walking to the ring. And then a point for closing with Raw versus SmackDown, because it's a ton of star power. And then finally a point for Undertaker closing the show. A very memorable return with him cleaning house and stalking Orton.
For our minuses, we got making Triple H and Flair non-title. Really telegraphed the finish. I remember, like, on the weekend syndicated TV that would, like, recap Raw, like Afterburn or whatever, like, they still had it as, like, an Intercontinental title match. So they were all over the place whether this was going to be for the title or not. We got Daivari as a guest ref. It's, again, a desperate chance to you know, prevent Cena getting booed and get the heat on Angle. We get all the ref bumps and replacements, really mess with the flow of Cena and Angle. The long mess with Bischoff and Teddy Long. Mm-hmm. It's way too overbooked and it's more forced cross brand stuff. Really kills the vibe of a well worked card, and you know, a SmackDown versus Raw build that had felt pretty natural. Other than that,
all right. So I went one star. It's been a long day, buddy. We went one plus one for card structure overall. There felt like one star. All the stuff you're saying. It is kind of a weird, the ref stuff and Cena angle really was a mess overall. So, and I don't know if Triple H winning the IC belt would have made sense, or maybe Flair loses it before that could have made sense. But yeah, once you knew it was non-title, it's like, all right, Hunter's obviously winning. Like, he already lost one and now the belt's not on the line. But rewatchability, Edge roasting the Tigers right before they make the World Series, and Edge calls Dimitri Mark Henry, which is funny. Dimitri hits him back. So that was a really good little segment. I think it's, besides the steroid piece, I actually thought it was pretty funny. It held up well. And then a point for the SmackDown team promo was awesome. They were really locked in.
For the Miocs, we get Triple H stabbing Ric Flair with the screwdriver. That's always rough to watch. It's always a thing I think about when I think of this match. And Edge making the steroid and drug jokes, again, just weeks after the passing of Eddie Guerrero. Really untimely. So that gives us a war of zero for rewatchability.
All-time matches also gets a zero because we had one all-time great in Triple H Flair and one all-time bad in Teddy Long, Eric Bischoff. So those cancel out, giving us a final total war score of 13.75, Marcus, which is just 0.25 higher than Taboo Tuesday, which to me was absolutely shocking. Now, that leaves it tied with three other shows. I know it's definitely going to be below WrestleMania 2000 because I believe the ladder match is likely to be the highest graded there, right? I think we probably had that higher than this Flair Triple H.
Yeah, I think we both went five.
Let me triple check. Yeah, we're both fives. And then Capital Punishment 11.
That's going to have Orton and
Christian.
Christian. I think I'm four and a quarter.
So this is higher because I had 4.5. So, all right. So that puts this at 76th all time. Again, tied with Mania 2000. So it's below that. And it's above Capital Punishment 11 and Extreme Rules 15 was also 375. And just a couple spots above Taboo Tuesday 05 and Unforgiven 05, also 13.5. So you can see where this season has been, and New Year's Revolution is right below. It's not part of the season, but part of this calendar year. So you can kind of see what the season's been. We've had like the highest of the highs with a One Night Stand and SummerSlam and Vengeance, which we'll talk about in a second. And then these like back end meh shows, not all time bad, but just ugh. And to me, Survivor Series is the most disappointing of the season so far because it should have been a lot better. It had the talent and the matches and the structure, but just again, everything felt like it just underperformed throughout the whole night.
Yeah, and I think we're really finding the old theory that like WWE gets cold, you know, after SummerSlam. Like, yeah, it does. And I don't know if this is the first season, but you can really feel it, I think, during the season. Like, creatively, they're just kind of running out of gas and trying to crawl to get to the Rumble. And of course, the major hit of Eddie passing away, both to the roster and also and to the product, but also, you know, PR wise, it's a really big black eye for wrestling, which had gone a little bit without one. So,
oh yeah, you got the Eddie stuff. Eddie stuff, Cena not resonating, Vince going hard into the, you know, raunchy shit. And we'll talk about Batista in our next episode, what happens with him. So they just kind of, it's a kind of bunch of stuff that goes wrong at once for them here during this stretch. So, all right, why don't we quickly hit our top 10, Marcus, of all time, and then we'll wrap up. Our 10th place show all time is Evolution 2018 with 38 points.
Number 9 is the SummerSlam in 1999 with a 38.25.
Just above that, SummerSlam 1992, also with the same score, but had the best match, which is our tiebreaker.
We've got SummerSlam 2001 with a war of 39.
WrestleMania 7 is our 6th place show at 39.5.
In at five is Vengeance 2005 with a WAR of 41.
SummerSlam 1990 just above that in fourth place at 42.
Top three time, we have Royal Rumble 2002 with a 44.
SummerSlam 2005 at 46.5.
And our number one show, possibly breaking the system, is One Night Stand 2005 with a WAR of 79.
Pretty insane. But as you can see, what I just talked about, in our top five are three shows from this season. Vengeance, SummerSlam, and One Night Stand. And then we just had those like four other shows that were all low. It's like nothing in between, it feels like. Although I feel like No Mercy might have been. Yeah, No Mercy finished 32nd. That's like kind of been the one. Judgment Day also was okay. So, but yeah, this last run has really dragged the season down. All right, we'll be back in 2 weeks. We're going to cover Armageddon 2005 and then New Year's Revolution 2006. And then we're nearing the end, buddy. We only got three more episodes left in the season, so stick with us. And I'll be on to the next one. As we mentioned earlier, subscribe to everything here at North South Connection, both audio, video, and social media. We appreciate all the support. As always, continue to live your life above replacement level. Enjoy WrestleMania weekend for those going, for those watching, for those celebrating. If you're not, whatever. Watch the old stuff and then watch shows like this. Transistor.